The two main questions around the Mets after the Game 1 loss to the Dodgers were, why did Kodai Senga start the game, and can they start Kodai Senga again in this postseason? So the first question, look, Sean Manaea would have been on regular rest. Luis Severino actually would have had a couple days extra rest. But this time of year, it's tricky with all the innings on those guys' arms, the high leverage intensity they've been pitching so far in the postseason. And these decisions are made in consultation with the training staff, the coaching staff, the players themselves. And the understanding in the team here, on the team side, was that both of those pitchers could have used the extra day. The Mets did like what they saw from Senga in Philadelphia, although the scouts following the postseason didn't love it. They thought that even after that Kyle Schwarber home run, Senga nibbled a little bit, was a little tentative, wasn't attacking. Obviously, we saw that even worse in Game 1 against the Dodgers. The Dodgers don't chase like the Phillies did. Senga did not have life on his pitches. He didn't have the velocity. He didn't have the command. He really didn't show the Mets much to suggest that it would be a good idea to put him out there in Game 5, if there's a Game 5. We'll see what they decide. They haven't committed to anything yet.
Welcome to the Game 1 NLCS Reaction Edition of the Talking Mets Podcast here on this Monday, October the 14th, 2024. Of course, I'm your host, Mike Silva. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You can get me on X, Talking Mets, no G, and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com, no G, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. You can get me on Instagram, TalkingMetsNoG. And don't forget the newsletter, Substack.com/@TalkingMetsNoG. And I want to thank the good folks on the fan-sided podcasting network for supporting this show. Welcome to the Game 1 Reaction Edition of the Talking Mets Podcast. Not much to react to. Mets lose to the Dodgers 9-0. From start to finish, a complete domination by the Dodgers of the Mets. And on to Game 2, which we'll start early. It'll be a 4 o'clock start, so a quick turnaround. Not much really to get into here today, and boy, do I feel like I've been talking like for 24 hours between doing the spaces in the morning, spending some time with the Dodgers crew, doing my own preview show, and then obviously doing the post-game spaces with our friend Anthony Rivera, Subway to Shea. I feel like I've been talking for 24 hours, but let's put a little cap on Game 1 and the festivities on Sunday before you all start getting ready for Game 2. There's not much you can do here, and we talked about it last night, but just shaking this thing off. And if you think about the animal kingdom, you think about dogs, anyone who owns a dog, what happens sometimes what you see them do? They kind of like get up and they just, you know, they shake themselves to kind of get whatever bad energy or any kind of like, you know, recalibration they need to do. They teach you a lot, the animal kingdom. And really that's what the Mets need to do. They just need to get out, shake it off, get the bad vibes off, and move on to Game 2. There's not much they can do here. Everything that we were concerned about regarding the Dodgers in this matchup, and I know even I had said I'd rather see the Dodgers than the Padres, and thought that was a better matchup for the Mets. And let me be clear, it was like picking your poison with those two teams, both really good teams. One team, both teams have good offenses. The Dodgers have the best, I think, in the league. I know Arizona scored a squish more, but from a lot of advanced metrics, the Dodgers are better. But both had good offenses. I thought the Padres had better starting pitching, and I thought the Padres' bullpen was a key differentiation where I thought the Mets could get into the Dodgers' bullpen. And you'll see that today, and we'll see how that plays out with the Dodgers going with the Game 2 bullpen game. And I think if they play the series ahead, I think as they play the series ahead, the Dodgers would be more inclined to go to a bullpen game and save their pitchers to put the hammer down, whether it be Buehler, Yamamoto, and then, of course, Flaherty, who was great last night. But what you saw, even though this was, like I said, the more preferable matchup, was how quickly the Dodgers could score and they could capitalize on opportunities. And unlike the Phillies and Milwaukee, the Mets, with the Dodgers not being a chase team, a team that led the league in walks during the regular season, The Mets, who had the most walks in the league, have to be careful to revert back to some of those habits because, as you saw right off the bat in the first inning, Senga didn't have anything. He gets three guys on base. And right away with two outs, it looks like he's about to get out of it. With two outs, he gives up a base hit to Muncy, and right away the Dodgers are up 2-0. In a lot of ways, if Senga, who talked about in the postgame, having some mechanical issues in the bullpen, if he had been able to figure it out and get out of that with Muncy at the plate, I think that might have been a big turning point. But the real problem is, even with that, the Mets, and this was a stat, I can't remember which caller on the postgame brought it up, but four out of the six games this postseason, the Mets have not scored off of a starting pitcher. You could talk about how they couldn't score off of Ranger Suarez. They couldn't score off of Wheeler. They couldn't score off of Flaherty last night. And then, of course, Tobias Myers, the kid in Milwaukee? They couldn't score off of him in the decisive game three, the game where Alonso hit the home run. So the Mets have been having trouble scoring against the elite starting pitching that they're facing here in the postseason, but it hasn't been a problem because their starters have kept them in the game and kept them within one or two runs. And look, that's not a knock. It's going to be hard to score for guys like Flaherty. It'll probably be hard to score off of Yamamoto. A guy like Wheeler is a dominant pitcher, and Ranger Suarez is in chopped liver, although you would have liked to see the Mets capitalize against him in game four before they got to the bullpen in the Lindor Grand Slam. For the Mets to be able to put that formula, and that's really a common postseason formula, keep it close with the starters, get into the other team's bullpen, they can't be down 6-0 when the other team's bullpen comes in the game. And with this Dodgers team, you get a couple of runners on at the bottom, especially at the bottom of the lineup, and you get to Ohtani and Freddie Freeman, who I know is on one leg but can still hit, guys like Will Smith and so on, and Mookie Betts, you're going to have yourself a lot of problems, and you saw that. So really, the key here is, can the Mets limit the walks, which they didn't do during the regular season, which is something that concerns me greatly. And as I watched the Dodgers last night, I feel confident that a Manaea, a Quintana, even a Severino could navigate that lineup and get the Mets through five or six innings. I don't know how easy it's going to be, especially if it's a one or two run game, for the bridge, the Mets bridge, to get through seventh and eighth inning, maybe even a couple outs in the sixth. I thought Reed Garrett, out of everybody last night, looked the best, and maybe against the right-handed portion of the Dodgers lineup, maybe they could deploy him a little bit. What I was really looking for in the blowout was to see some glimmer of information that would make me feel more comfortable about the bridge to Diaz, because ultimately that's how this game is going to be won or lost. Danny Young didn't look horrible. Maybe you'd think about him against Ohtani and Freeman. Reed Garrett looked good. Peterson and Buto did not, and we'll get to Senga in a minute. And maybe that's partly because he did give up an unearned run with the Mets giving up an unearned run. Maybe that's part and parcel coming in already down 3-0, and having been used a few days earlier. It's going to be interesting if Peterson can be effective, because we really haven't seen that yet. Can he be effective? He was in Milwaukee coming in to get the save, but since then he's been on somewhat of a schedule, so to speak, knowing that he'd be coming in. He knew he was going to come in at some point in the game four clincher. He was going to piggyback Singh in game one against Wheeler, and now today it was planned. So it makes you wonder, is that part of who he is, or can he be able to pivot and come in between games in the series when the Mets really need him, especially if they look at that top of the lineup? That's the part of the lineup, the bridge. Now, there's Stanek and there's Maton, and maybe you're going to, not maybe, you're probably going to have to use them. But you saw the power of the Dodgers last night. You saw how quickly they could score, and I was shocked at how good the final line for Flaherty was. Now, the Mets had him, I think, the real point where they could have maybe turned the worm on Flaherty. He had the dominant first three innings. He had his slider going. The Mets couldn't catch up to his fastball. He had everything going. He was the Flaherty that was the ace for the Cardinals. He was the Flaherty that was able to get the Tigers some prospect capital at the deadline and trade him to the Dodgers and actually get into a little bit of a war with the the bidding war between the Yankees and the Dodgers. It's the National League Championship Series, and the Mets are playing the Dodgers. Why not have some fun while you're watching the game with Underdog? Take a swing at Pick'em this baseball season on Underdog. Over a million fans across 33 states got in the game last year by making picks on Underdog. Win up to 1,000 times your money just by choosing higher or lower on your favorite player stats, like strikeouts, total bases, and home runs. Look, you're a Mets fan. Take the higher on Pete Alonso and the home run. Take the higher on Kodai Senga and the strikeouts. Why not? If you're a Dodgers fan or you want to make a little money and you like Shohei Ohtani, take the higher on how many home runs the Mets pitcher that day is going to give up. The possibilities are endless. Underdog is super easy to play, and it's even easier to get started. Go to their easy-to-use mobile app or to underdogfantasy.com. Sign up for promo code TALKING, T-A-L-K-I-N-G, and Underdog will give you a mystery special pick to use on your first Pick'em entry, plus a first-time deposit offer up to $1,000 in bonus cash. That's Underdog Fantasy, promo code TALKING, T-A-L-K-I-N-G, to claim your new customer special of a mystery player pick and your deposit offer. Must be 18 or older, 19 or older in Alabama and Nebraska, 19 or older in Colorado for some games, 21 and older in Massachusetts and Arizona, and present in a state where Underdog Fantasy operates. Terms apply. Void in Colorado. Concerned with your play? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.ncpgambling.org. In Arizona, 1-800-NEXT-STEP or text NEXTSTEP to 53342. In New York, call the 24/7 HOPE line at 1-877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY at 467-369. I'm playing Underdog Fantasy this National League Championship Series playoff season. Why don't you? But when they had a couple of runners on and two outs, and Marte hit that ball to right, and the one thing that you have to remember, and I don't have the stats in front of me, but I'm sure if we went to Baseball Savant or one of the advanced sites, it would bear this out. Getting the ball out of Dodger Stadium at night is not easy. Now, during the day, it might be a little bit different. We'll see how that plays out because it'll be 1 o'clock L.A. time when the game starts today, 4 o'clock New York time. Marte had another ball later in the game that looked really good, as well as Ohtani. And none of those balls went out. I mean, I think they were well over 100 miles an hour, all those balls. So if the ball splits the alley, the Marte ball in the fourth and a couple of runs score or goes over the fence to tie the game, I think it's a different ball game. And that was really the difference. A lot of the small things the Mets did throughout the postseason, it didn't happen yesterday. And sometimes that's just a matter of B-I-B-I-P. B-A-B-I-P. Excuse me, B-A-B. B-A-B-I-P. Everybody's off, including me. And there's not much you could do about that. Now, the big conversation is Senga. And the question, should they have started Senga? And look, this is a guy that we knew was not going to be 100% healthy. And the reason I don't necessarily question it is, and when I say health, I don't mean that, I know his velocity's down, and I know he had the calf injury, and I know he's been having shoulder issues all year. But he was not healthy in the sense where he was stretched out to give you a standard 5 or 6 inning start. So the formula with Senga is that you're basically pitching a bullpen game. And with the way that the Mets bridge has been, how shaky it's been, I don't blame Carlos Mendoza and Jeremy Hefner for giving it a shot. If you get 3 really good innings out of him at the beginning of the game, and then you bring in Peterson, who's really the de facto starter, you essentially could eliminate the need to go to any bridge and go straight to Diaz at that point. It didn't work because Senga had nothing. Now, whether or not he starts again, the next start would be a game 5. And I know we have to say if necessary. I don't think the Mets are going to lay down and die here and be swept. I really don't, although I know a lot of people felt after yesterday's game that it may be an inevitability. Whether or not they're able to trust Senga in a game 5, I think that remains to be seen. I think you have to really have an honest conversation. I think it's going to take a lot of critical thinking on side sessions and understanding, you know, where is he at velocity-wise? Where is he at with his mechanics? You're basically using postseason starts to build him up. This is no different than spring training. It's not Port St. Lucie. It's the playoffs. It's the championship series. They're fighting to go to the World Series. This isn't Syracuse rehab starts. It's virtually impossible to expect Senga to have a normal postseason when he was out for a while, built himself back up, had a totally unrelated injury against the Braves, the calf, had to be shut down. We thought he was done for the year. And then, surprise, he's starting in the division series against the Phillies because, again, I think the Mets knew, even against the Phillies, that the bridge to Diaz is shaky. It's been shaky and been overused. So I can't criticize them on that. I think the other thing we have to remember when there's all this second-guessing by the fans and the media, the Mets didn't just do this capriciously in a vacuum. They spoke to Manaea. They spoke to Severino, who's going to have some extended rest. They spoke to Quintana and looked at where they're all at. And Manaea pitched very well on extended rest against the Phillies at Citi Field. So I think that they're trying to set up the entire rotation for success. I think if you're going to deploy Senga, you deploy him in the scenario where the Mets, if they had the San Diego bullpen, I'm not sure they have to go this route. I'm not sure they take the chance. I think it's out of necessity. I really do. This is where this team is at. The issues and where the gaps are in the roster and the team and about, you know, whether they win it all or not, that'll be addressed in the offseason. It'll be addressed pretty soon because the offseason and the end of the regular season are going to be pretty tight. There's not going to be this long gap because of the longer playoff run. So I'm not here to second-guess Hefner and Mendoza. The organization has done right throughout the year. They've shown you that they have a plan. Not that the plan always works. Not that everything they roll comes up, sevens, or snake eyes, I should say. I'm really off this morning, I got to tell you. I'm saying seven, snake eyes, whatever. Not everything that they do comes up aces. Let's put it that way. Let's use the right terminology here. But anyway, I think that they'll be pretty critical with their analysis on whether or not Senga is an option the rest of the postseason. And if he's not an option to be an opener, then I guess you bring Ottavino back. I think you saw a little bit about where Ottavino could have been helpful in burning an inning. No Buto, no Peterson today. But really, today's a day where it's going to be Manaea. The hope is that Manaea is going to be able to go six. The hope then is that you go probably with Stanek and Maton to get the ball to Diaz. If Manaea gets knocked out early, I think that'll be interesting how they play it. You'll probably see a little bit more Reed Garrett again. You'll probably see Danny Young again. I don't know how they would play this out. Would they go back and bring a starter out like a Severino and then figure it out as the series goes on? So I think that was a bit of a risk. But even Mendoza during the game, who was talking, I guess it was to Verducci or Rosenthal, I can't remember, he said that they were well-rested and they felt good about their bullpen, and away you go. So on to game two, there's not much more to say other than we know the Dodgers are tough, we know they can score, but let's face it, they haven't given up a run in 33 innings. They're not going to go the rest of the postseason without giving up a run. This was a team that less than a week ago was about to be eliminated. They're not perfect. They're not the 96 Bulls. I don't even know if they're as good as the Dodgers team that was on the field just a year earlier. But they're very good. And with that top of the lineup, with Ohtani, with even with a gimpy Freeman, with Betts, who's about to break out. He didn't play hardly at all this summer. I mean, think about it. He was out quite a bit throughout the summer. I think it was a hand, broken hand or whatever it may be. So, and they still won 98 ball games. So it tells you how tough they are. But I think also the Mets on the offensive side have to start to work these starting pitchers and find a way to play a little bit from ahead. The same formula that they had in game three against Nola. Not that they knocked Nola around, but they were able to get a lead. They were able to set everything up. And playing from behind, playing very tight against the Dodgers without some kind of early cushion is going to be very difficult and potentially could be a death knell at this point. The thing that we're starting to see with the Dodgers' top two or three offensive players, forget about the component guys like Muncy, maybe I'll even put Will Smith into there. They're better than the Mets' top guys. Yeah, you have Lindor, the MVP, but when you look at the performance year-to-date from the other top hitters in the Mets lineup, core stars, Nimmo and Alonso particularly, they have not had the same type of years. Now it's come out that Nimmo's been suffering from plantar fasciitis since May. Makes a ton of sense for now that maybe that's why he's had a bit of a down offensive year. I know he's had some other injuries with the shoulder and whatnot. None of the Mets component guys have stepped up. Alvarez, even though Marte's been involved in a lot of the rallies, he hasn't really hit up much. Winker's had a home run, but he hasn't hit much. Iglesias has come back down to earth, probably because he's been facing a lot of tough right-handed pitching. And yes, Vientos has had a great postseason, but He looked very overmatched against Flaherty last night, particularly on his slider, and had one of those three strikeout and games that you're going to get from a guy like Vientos from time to time, where he's just going to miss everything. And then all of a sudden, the next day, he comes back and he hits a big home run. So we'll see about that. I would start McNeil today at second base. I was thinking about this and talked about this in the post game. You know, should they start McNeil or maybe keep Iglesias at second and put Marte, leave Marte in right? What you might be able to do is, if you want to keep somewhat of an offensive component, keep Tyrone Taylor in center late, move McNeil to right because he's good defensively, and then put Iglesias at second. But I know that also would play into, do they want to keep Vientos at third and keep his bat in the lineup? So it will be interesting to see. And they do have Acuña, so they could play that too, where they put Iglesias at third, Acuña at second, and go real defensive for the back half of the game. Bottom line is the Mets are going to need to play much tighter. They can't make base running the errors like they did with Winker. They can't walk hitters, especially early, like they did in the first inning. They have to be better. They have to play better. And this is a Dodger team that's going to work counts. This is a Dodger team that's not going to get themselves out. So the Mets now have really waded into the deep end of the pool. This is the best team that they may face the entire postseason. It very well may be better than Cleveland and the Yankees. I'm pretty sure they're better than the Yankees. Cleveland has some interesting components to them, especially with that bullpen. That's a story for another day. Still a lot of baseball to be played. Mets have to get a game in LA, get it back to New York, and the goal should be, can they get this thing back to LA by next Sunday? Up 3-2 to give themselves the best chance possible to win. Now, you're going to wave the white flag if the Mets are playing behind and have to come back to LA and win a couple of games? No, you're not going to. This team has proven time and time again that you don't write them out. The story that has been playing out all seasons, particularly since Memorial Day, has been incredible. But let's be fair. Grimace, OMG, Mets Magic, Amazing Believe, all the things that we want to talk about and have fun with this postseason. Cold, hard facts remain. The Dodgers are a tough team. Their pitching is not as good as what they've been displaying over the last 2 or 3 games. But that offense will make it not necessary for these pitchers to pitch very well. And let's also face it, if you're playing in the postseason or any time in the baseball season with a 6-run lead, makes it a hell of a lot easier for Flaherty to take chances and go out there and be dominant. And the same for Walker Buehler and yes, Yamamoto. And then maybe you don't have to use your top like they didn't have to last night, bullpen arm, so you give them that much more rest. So there's a lot to be had. Here's where I'll leave you off. I don't know what the Mets are going to do today. They have a bullpen game, the Dodgers. It's not like the bullpen is chopped liver, but I like the Mets in bullpen games. All postseason, they've been able to work these bullpens. Now they don't have to worry about facing 2 or 3 times through the order a very good top of the rotation starting pitcher. What I would like to see is how they played today, because it's going to tell me a lot about the rest of the series. Win or lose. Losing today would put them in quite a bind. It would make it very unlikely that they'd be able to come back and win this series, but not impossible. It would just change the dynamic where now they have to be perfect at home, something that I don't really feel anybody could be expected to do against this Dodger team. The Dodgers are going to get a game in New York, I'm pretty convinced. So if they lose today, the Mets, best case scenario, I think, is they come back down 3-2, which is the scenario we don't want to see. But did the Mets get shook last night? We don't think so. History tells us they haven't been. But when they saw how good the Dodgers are and how quickly that game spiraled when they weren't at their best, it could put a little seed of doubt in your head. It could. So I'd like to see how crisply they are. Are they going to play better in the field? Are they going to play better on the base paths? Are they going to throw strikes and attack hitters? They have to attack these Dodgers hitters. They can't dance around Freeman. They can't dance around Otani. They can't dance around Betts. You give up a home run, so be it. I'd rather them give up the home run then walk 2 or 3 hitters and get dinked and dunked, because now they're coming in because they have to when they fall behind. And that's how you could look up and see that you're down 6, 7, 8, 9, nothing. The Dodgers didn't blast them with prodigious home runs. They dinked and dunked them to death. A bunt, a base hit, a bunt, a base hit, a walk, a 2-out hit. Championship teams do that. The Mets have done that. The Mets did that to the Phillies in Game 1. They got Metsed. The Mets got Metsed yesterday. Now let's see how they respond. So it'll be interesting. 4:00 start. If you're working, and you're driving, 10 o'clock, 2 o'clock, stay on the wheel. Don't drive off the road. Drive safe. Listen to the game. Listen responsibly. I will be back tonight after the game. Let's assume the game ends around 7:30. I'll be back with a Twitter Spaces, Anthony Rivera, Subway to Shea, Mike Silva, taking your questions and your calls. We've had some new callers pop on. We've had great response. I even had a decent Sunday morning following for my Twitter Spaces. Not as much as the post game. That's understandable. So it's been a great experience. It's something that has opened up a new repertoire to the Talking Mets podcast that I think we'll be using going forward a little bit over and over and over again, especially during the offseason. So, all right, that's it. On to game two. Shake it off, guys. Shake it off. That's all you can do. The Mets got to shake it off. So do you. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You get me on X at TalkingMetsNoG and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. No G, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. You can get me on Instagram, TalkingMetsNoG. And don't forget the newsletter, Substack.com/@TalkingMetsNoG. And I want to thank the good folks on the Fansided Podcasting Network for supporting this show. I'm your host, Mike Silva. Enjoy your Monday. Get ready for game two at 4 o'clock. See you after the game. Take care, everybody. Meet the Mets. Head for the